shut up about Lando already.
Karoo,
Shandor, this message is for you, mate. Stop it.
Are you ready?
And it's lights out and away we go.
Hello and welcome back to Away We Go podcast. My name's Diane Bortoletto and today I'm in Margaret River. And sounding a bit stuffy, I'm so sorry because I'm just recovering from a winter cold. And joining me again is the lovely Kira Gillen, all the way from Berlin. Hi, Kira.
Hi, how are you? How are you feeling, you poor thing?
I actually don't feel too bad. It's just I sound worse than I feel. So that's, I guess, a good thing. Yeah, it was a pretty unfun weekend, you know, besides the race, I suppose.
Well, I mean, I didn't have much of a weekend either because it was sweltering here in Berlin. It was like 40 degrees and above. We were both suffering in different ways.
In different ways, totally. We often get 40 degrees in Australia. That's not new. But in Europe, wow, like 30 degrees is hot in Europe. It's a different heat. I don't care what anyone says. It feels different over there and it feels hotter and worse. So, oh, you poor thing. Well, hopefully you were able to stay cool and indoors and be close to a fan or air conditioning.
Yeah, we have a fan. I was eating lots of ice cream. I've swollen both in physicalness and yeah.
The heat affected the race in Austria as well. So we've just had the Austrian Grand Prix at the Red Bull Ring in Spielberg. It is a 4.326 kilometer circuit, one of the shortest on the calendar, not the shortest. Monaco's shorter, but it is quicker than Monaco because it is a high speed power circuit, whereas Monaco is a street circuit and slow and twisty. 71 laps and extreme heat in Austria with everybody complaining about it, the commentary team nonstop complaining about it, the drivers couldn't wait to get away from the interviews when they were done and get out of the heat. And the fans did really well to stick it through and watch the qualifying and the race in those conditions. So, yeah, the race. How would you describe the race, Kira, in a few short words?
I think it depends on your perspective. So from my perspective, I would say a bit lackluster, a bit uneventful. But if you're a George Russell fan, you're going to be like, oh, it was great. It was intense. It was exciting. It was, and obviously you got the win, which he has been dying for a long time. I've heard something interesting that I think Lando, didn't he win in Austria last year? And wasn't this a turning point for him in the championship? So there's all this thing now that George is back. He needs to watch out. He's now got momentum on his side. If he keeps his cool. I think it was an interesting race from that side, but from a Ferrari fan perspective, yeah.
Double thumbs down. Yeah, it was a Ferrari disaster. Oh, we had high hopes, didn't we? But it just did not land at all in Austria. The race results then, as you said, George Russell came in on the top step. He won the race for Mercedes. Max Verstappen finished in second, something I didn't see coming and certainly didn't put in my predictions for the race. Oh, you did? Oh, well done.
I did.
So Max Verstappen stormed to second. Kimi Antonelli finished in third, the other Mercedes. Oscar Piastri fourth. Great race from Oscar. We'll talk about that. Lewis Hamilton in fifth in the Ferrari. Isaac Hadjar in sixth in Red Bull Racing. Lando Norris in seventh in the McLaren. In eighth was Charles Leclerc in the other Ferrari. Ninth, Liam Lawson in Racing Bulls. And rounding out the top 10 was Arvid Lindblad in the other Racing Bulls. So, yes, like you said, George Russell qualifying. We've got to talk about qualifying. So George Russell qualified on pole position and he qualified on pole position by a skerrick of a millisecond. Because what happened was Max Verstappen went off and hit the wall. And so double yellow flags were waved. And if you cross the line before double yellow flags, then your lap time counts. If you don't, then your lap time doesn't count, right? So
yeah, but it wasn't double yellow. That's the thing. So it was only a single yellow.
Yeah, but 1 millisecond later, there was double yellow. So it was just really extremely lucky timing for George Russell. We've talked about the Formula One gods not smiling on him in other races. They were this race. Mm-hmm. Some luck went his way.
So my understanding was that it was, so Kimi thought it was a double yellow, but it was a single yellow in at turn nine, and you're supposed to lift there. And George did lift. Now, the argument is how much are you supposed to lift and how long are you supposed to lift for? But he did lift. And then when he got past turn nine, there was a green flag and then he was able to go again. The reality was George was going quite fast anyway. So George was going to do a blitzer of a lap anyway. What showed the difference for me between George and Antonelli was George's experience. George knew how to handle that. Because obviously these guys are driving so fast, he instinctively took his foot off, did his lifting that he had to do, and then was able to keep going at the speed that he needed to go. Whereas poor Kimi thought it got confused, thought it was a double yellow, completely aborted, and didn't know how to handle the situation. And I do think that comes down to experience. I think Kimi will massively learn from this because he's very sharp, I feel. He doesn't seem to make the same mistake twice. We won't talk about some other stuff, actually. But yeah, I think George's experience really came in there, and that's why. And it was devastating for Ferrari. Devastating, all the guys cheering. Yeah. And then maybe then there was the double yellow flag afterwards, but as you say, split second. But like in that moment, it was only a single yellow.
Yeah, that's true. So it was, but oh, it was just one of those things. I was like, no, that lap surely can't be allowed. And then when, you know, watching the replays and seeing, okay, it was a single yellow. Yes, George qualified on pole position and he capitalized on that to take the race win.
Did you see the post? It's not the post-race interview. It's after they qualified, okay? And they're all, so it was George and Charles, and they were taking off their helmets and they were drying themselves off and getting a bit of water. And Russell was so excited. Poor Charles. Charles did his best acting ever. Best acting I've ever seen that guy do. He's his face, he's like, yeah. And you can see behind his eyes, he's, how the hell did you get this? I had just done a whopper of a lap. Max crashes, does me this favor. How did you get past? And you can see he's just like, yeah, what the hell? Oh, man, it was so good. It was so sad, but it was so good.
Yes, because Ferrari were on track to take pole position right before that moment. So it was Lewis, and then Charles got in just above Lewis. Oh, my gosh. And then, yeah, then Max went off, George got it, and it was like, oh. But we know how. It was all above board. Unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
So qualifying, as we said, Charles in second in the Ferrari, Lewis Hamilton in third in the Ferrari, then Kimi Antonelli was fourth, Max Verstappen qualified fifth, then Lando Norris in sixth, Oscar Piastri in seventh, Isaac Hadjar in eighth, Liam Lawson in ninth, and Arvid Lindblad in 10th. So that's the top 10 for qualifying, and it was close. Well, George was 0.2 up from Charles in qualifying, and between Charles and Lewis, it was like 0.5. It was like really very, very close. And then between Lewis and Kimi was even closer. It was like 1/100th of a second difference. Yeah. God, we're talking minutiae, aren't we? We're talking the time to blink is longer than the time between the gaps in qualifying. But yeah, so Lando qualified ahead of Oscar in the race in sixth. Oscar was in seventh. But Oscar finished the race in fourth and Lando finished in seventh. Now, I'm going to harp on about this because I'm so tired. I'm so tired of the Sky Sports commentators talking about Lando Norris when he's poodling along in eighth position, doing nothing. He's not battling with anyone. There's no action on the track. There's nothing really to even mention. Like, if that was Arvid Lindblad or if that was Liam Lawson poodling along in eighth with no battles, the commentary team wouldn't even mention them. But because it's Lando, they keep talking. And I was just sitting there watching the TV going, will you shut up about Lando already? Karoo, Shandong, this message is for you, mate. Stop it. We don't care when he's not in the front or he's not battling with anyone, all right? All right. I'm tired, I'm grumpy, I'm sick. And so that's my major rant. It was doing my head in watching the race and just every so often. Lando. Okay, he's the reigning world champion, but he wasn't doing anything of any note. I have no issue with it when he's battling, when there's something to talk about, but when there's nothing to talk about. Talk about the drivers that are actually doing something on track.
It's weird though. Obviously, I don't watch Sky Sports, and to be honest, I probably couldn't bring myself to do it. But it is weird that they would obsess about Lando when George is British as well, and he was up there winning the race.
We all know Lando's their favourite.
Right. Okay.
But Lando is the one that they all seem to love. And he does get a really good chunk of commentary airtime, that's for sure.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that would kill me. Lando is a nice guy. Yeah, fair play to him winning the championship last year. But you're right, there's nothing, he's not doing anything exciting at all this year, which obviously is very tough for him as a reigning world champion to not be even able to compete up there. And they're not doing the worst, but they really aren't lighting the board on fire. We've talked about how before when he, where was it, he came third, but it was only because he was happened to be just there. You know what I mean? It wasn't because McLaren are exciting. I do think Oscar, he showed pace in free practice, in some of the free practice. And I really am delighted that he got fourth because he did have a bit of pace, but he still really wasn't that kind of exciting. I think it was, is it fair to say, people probably, let me in the comments, is it fair to say that Ferrari just didn't have the pace that they should have had rather than McLaren having pace? And maybe I'm contradicting myself because I did just say he did well in free practice, but free practice is never always clear. People hide things and they all go out with different fuel amounts and stuff like that. I'm really glad for Piastri because he needed a good result. It's been so long since he's performed. And after obviously last year being ending a mare for him, I was really glad to see him up there. I would love to see him on the pole. I would love to see him get a win. But McLaren are just so hit and miss at the moment.
Yeah, this new era of car, it's not developed enough in that team yet. They're not there yet with it. You know, Mercedes are there. Red Bull are showing promise, which is probably going to bode well for them with all the rumours circulating around about Max potentially looking at other teams. You know, what did his manager say? Max would love to see his Formula One days out with Red Bull, but he was not made to fight in the mid-pack. Yeah.
Cutting words.
Yes, exactly, exactly. The fact that Red Bull were able to be competitive this weekend at their home track, as in Red Bull Energy Drinks home track, I think bodes well for Max's future. Yes, but Oscar, I agree. Really, really great to see Oscar dominate his teammate this race. As we said, heartbreaking for Ferrari. We had big expectations. They were bringing a big upgrade to Austria, right? And it just didn't materialise in result.
Yeah.
Like you said, last race, Ferrari were really aggressive with their strategy. And I feel like they did that again this race. Lewis was first to pit. They did a 3-pit stop strategy. He was the first one to pit for a second time as well. So it was like they were setting the pace, but it didn't materialize.
It didn't have the pace ultimately. Like, because that's what I meant. It felt like the same strategy or the same kind of aggressiveness in a way, but they didn't have the pace. I think pitting for that VSC during that VSC might have been a mistake for Lewis, but ultimately Charles had to pit 3 times. So I think they probably would have had to pit 3 times. They just didn't have it. The degradation seemed to be quite high for Ferrari as well. And it's such a pity because they were second and third and they had Kimi. Kimi was a disaster in those first couple of laps. He was all over the place. He was making such wild moves and so many mistakes.
In the first lap, he went off track 3 times and only once he gained an advantage and then he had to give the place straight back, which he did. No issues there, but
Yeah,
just because lap one, so all the cars are bunched in. It was wild. It was just like, oh, Kimi's off the track again.
And I think he even said afterwards he knew he made mistakes, but I think that, again, comes down to his, inverted commas, inexperience. I'm going to be, like, mean, but I do think it comes down to that. And I think he is quite an aggressive driver, and I think that's great for certain times and certain elements, but I think he was probably a little bit too aggressive and too impatient. And had he been more strategic, he would have taken those Ferraris much quicker. In the end, Ferraris shot themselves in the foot with their own tire deg or whatever was going on with them. The reality is that Lewis lost a podium. Lewis should have finished third in all things considered, or in the breakdown of the race, you know what I mean? But, or maybe fourth, but he was up there. Max was charging. There was no way he was going to beat Max. And we got some great battles between him and Max. When it came down to it, that Red Bull pace was much stronger than Ferrari's.
It was so good watching the battles between Lewis and Max going side by side. And it was really hard racing. It had me screaming at the TV and just on edge. It was fantastic to watch. Very, very exciting. And Max ended up reigning supreme between those battles, which is as it showed up on the results sheet. But Kimi Antonelli, in the end, he was right on Max's tail. And, you know, another couple of laps, Kimi might have caught Max. He was really pushing and trying to get better than third place. And yeah, he nearly caught Max. That was also a very exciting finish.
Oh, I think without a doubt, Kimi would have caught Max. Without a doubt, I think he was there. He just did. He only had one lap to try, and it just wasn't enough. Yep. 100% think Kimi was gunning for second. I was delighted Max finished second because I had George as first and I had Max as second on my podium. So I got a nice little haul of points because I did terribly everywhere else. So I was delighted. But it also was nice to see Max up there in the mix, and it was nice to see him go for George. And like, I mean, I just had a feeling because that's their ring. It's their ring. It's their track, Red Bulls. I just think after the last couple of races with Max, I was like, there's no way he's not going to try and really perform at this one. I just had a feeling that he was going to really give it his best, which he always would. But it was exciting to see him up there. And I think it was, again, a learning for Kimi. So it'll be interesting to see how Kimi performs now, how Kimi moves ahead, because it is, what do we race? Yeah, race 8. We've still got a long way to go. So it's very important that Kimi just keeps consistency.
Yeah. And, you know, the fact that he's on the podium at this race, I think is showing that Kimi's still up there and a contender.
Yeah.
And in fact, Kimi still leads the Drivers' Championship. He's ahead by 40 points. George Russell has leapfrogged Lewis Hamilton after this result. George Russell is in second place on the drivers' leaderboard. Lewis is in third, 6 points behind George. And then, 45 points behind Lewis is Oscar in the McLaren. And then 1 point behind Oscar is Lando. And Lando's on equal points with Charles Leclerc. So Charles is also 1 point behind Oscar. They're both on 79 points. And just for perspective, Kimi's on 171 points. So there's already, after 8 races, quite a gap between first and equal fifth. And Max is in 7th place on 73 points.
Yeah. So, but you never know what's going to happen. You honestly never know. Like Ferrari get to bring another engine upgrade at some point in the year. Mercedes get to bring an engine upgrade. Red Bull don't, which I find crazy, but apparently their A duo or whatever it's called, is they've got the best performing engine, so they won't. But it's Red Bull. There's no way they're just going to sit there and, as you say, be a midfield team. So I think Max will figure a way to be coming back. But you just never know. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, I do think ultimately it's a Kimi Russell fight for the title. I don't, but
you never know.
Exactly. Stranger things have happened.
That's right. They have. Well, we should talk about Cadillac 1 second.
Yeah.
Double DNF. Woeful. I think their car caught on fire, didn't they? Sergio Perez's car catch on fire. And Liam Lawson also reported his car was on fire, but they kept him out racing and we couldn't really see a fire. So I don't know if there was a fire. Maybe he was just feeling heat. Maybe there was smoke from something else. Don't really know. But yeah, the extreme conditions in Austria really didn't help anyone's tyres or anyone's engines. So yeah. Bye-bye, Cadillac, double DNF, no points for them.
They both had the same issue within 2 laps of each other. So by lap 5, they both were out with both smoking brakes. That's crazy. And apparently it was, they had similar issues over the weekend. So yeah, they're really struggling. And I know it's the first year and I know it's hard and everything, but it's got to be very demotivating for them. It's very tough. So I hope they're able to pick things up. Obviously, Silverstone will be cooler. Hopefully they won't have as many issues. But yeah, disappointing to see for them.
Really disappointing to see for Cadillac. Also disappointing for Carlos Sainz. He DNF'd as well on lap 23. Mm. And that was engine failure?
Yeah, I think so.
Lance Stroll, same thing. And then Fernando Alonso was like 3 laps behind. Oh, Aston Martin are having an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, Aston Martin, Cadillac and Williams. They're just the 3 teams that seem to be having absolute shit time. Shit qualities. Carlos was qualifying okay at the start of the season, but now it just seems to have, like, you know, going out quite often in Q1. But yeah, if you're going to predict who's going to DNF, it's going to be those 6, somewhere along the line of those 6 drivers. And it's just, yeah, it's really disappointing. Williams were up there midfield. Didn't they qualify, finished 5th in the season last year? And now they're down at the bottom, you know, never getting points, never having difficulty struggling, finishing the race, all this kind of stuff.
The disappointing thing with Williams is that they really talked up their game in the off-season about the development of this car. And, you know, James Vowles, like, really talked an amazing, just instill confidence in everyone who, maybe that's his gift. Maybe that's his gift, is that when he speaks about the team, he instills confidence in anyone that's listening. And maybe that's how they're able to get all this funding and keep all of their stakeholders and investors happy. But they're really very far behind the development of this era of car. It must be so hard, as especially Carlos Sainz, coming from Ferrari, where he was on the top step of the podium multiple times, to now, to being in a, you know, one of the top marking teams, to being in a bottom ranking team. That's gotta be tough, huh?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm a big Carlos fan, and
Me too.
Really want to see him do well. And I 100% agree that it must be really hard. And also there's rumors going around that maybe he might move to Audi. And I think I would hate for him to do that. But I actually feel more sorry for Albon, because I feel like Albon is this guy who basically has had faith in Williams for so long, deserves to be doing well and getting wins. And Carlos comes in as this, as a race winner. And again, it comes down to, if you've got a good car, like all these guys, if you put them in a car that can win, they're going to win, right? Lando fans are going to come for me. But who would have betted that Lando Norris would have become champion? I certainly wouldn't have. But put him in a race winning car and he can do it. You know what I mean? So, you look at someone like Albon and you're like, man, are you being wasted here? I don't know. Obviously, he's been on a lot of different teams.
But fun fact, he's the longest serving Williams driver in the history of Williams. And Williams has a really, really, really long history in Formula One, which is amazing.
I wouldn't lose faith, though, with Williams, because I do think that they will turn it around. Maybe not this season. This season might just be a complete washout for them. But I do think they have it in them. I think something has obviously gone wrong. They did quite well in 2025, and I do think they have it there. I think they will pull themselves out of the doldrums. It's just a question of when, in my opinion.
Yeah. It's hard to see it happening this season so far. But what I want to say about Carlos Sainz is that I read something really interesting during the week, in that he said there should be a championship where every driver drives every Formula One car. Right? So the drivers are contracted by Formula One, not by teams. The teams develop the cars. The drivers drive the different cars. And this is a way of being able to see who the best driver is. Because as we've said multiple times, just in this episode, you put any of these drivers in the best car, they're going to win. So by driving all the cars that are available, and that's going to differentiate the drivers, right? I would love to see that. I don't think it'll happen. And there is the Race of Champions, which is built on that premise of different discipline racing drivers from rallying and circuit racing, etc., driving the same spec car. Yeah, in a Formula One sense, I'd love to see that, even if they just did it for a weekend.
I think that's fun. Yeah, I think it's fun. Look, we get into it, that you think about keeping with Williams for a second, like they say that one of the reasons why Carlos is doing better is because he's had more experience driving difficult cars. And so there, we were listening to one Pablo Montoya on F1 yesterday, and he was saying, and I never usually quote this guy because he usually irritates me, but he was making a good point, an interesting point, maybe not a good point, but an interesting point, that the Williams car is quite difficult to drive. And so Carlos is somewhat performing better than Alex because he's an experienced driving difficult cars, i.e. with Ferrari. But I do think his idea of driving the different cars by the different manufacturers or the different teams would be interesting. But then also it does come down to your driving style as well, and what suits you. And they say that maybe that Lewis is understanding and dealing with this car better now than Charles is. And you can see over the last few races that Charles really is struggling. So it is interesting. But yeah. I don't know, one to hope for in the future, maybe.
And there's loads of rumours circulating at the moment, isn't there? And there's also rumours circulating that Esteban Ocon won't have a seat soon, and maybe even this season. That's not great for him.
Kind of rumour, I think, is really, I get it, right? But I also think it's really unfair because Haas really aren't doing great. Like the teams that are doing well.
But Ollie's outperformed him so much already, and he's supposed to be the experienced driver. I guess that's where they're coming from. I mean, if you look at Pierre Gasly and Franco Colapinto, Pierre is still dominant in Alpine compared to Franco, whereas in Haas, it's the rookie, Ollie Bearman, second year rookie, you know, that is more dominant in the car than Esteban, who's the experienced driver.
I heard a rumor that McLaren want us to take Leonardo Fornaroli, who is the number two champion. He's an amazing talent, who up until a few months ago didn't even have the flipping development team signed with him, that he was racing his way to winning, and he didn't even have a development team. I'm like, how did Ferrari not jump on this young Italian, which is just crazy to me, but anyway. But eventually he got picked up by McLaren. Yeah, so apparently he's the one has to basically break their relationship with Ferrari and take Fornaroli, which is what happens to Berman. But I don't know. That's the extent of my knowledge. What have you heard?
No, I heard the same thing, but I didn't hear anything further about what would happen to Ollie Bearman. Unless Lewis decides to leave Ferrari, I can't see Lewis being asked to leave Ferrari. It's going to be his call. He's a seven-time world champion. When he won the race 2 weeks ago, Ferrari stocks made something crazy, like $20 billion overnight because of Lewis's win. With that kind of economic power, Ferrari are never going to get rid of him. It'll be Lewis's call when he's ready to stop racing, I think.
100%.
And Charles has got a long-term contract. Charles is a part of the long-term Ferrari plan and for family, if you like.
Yeah,
there's no natural openings there. The other rumor was Alonso being lured back. Yeah, and actually Sky Sports interviewed Flavio Briatore before qualifying, it might have been before the race. That man is absolutely incomprehensible. And it's not his accent. I'm Italian. I'm not being any racist, but he just mumbles, right? He was so difficult to understand. Which is why he probably doesn't get a lot of airtime, because he's just not very good media talent. They asked him about Alonso and he kind of brushed it off. They asked him about the sale of the 24% of the Alpine team. And again, he brushed that off and said, I don't have anything to do with those talks. That's not kind of my area. We're very happy with our drivers. They talked about Pierre Gasly's third place from Monaco, which got
reinstated.
Well, it wasn't reinstated because it wasn't taken away.
True.
It was, was awarded as a result of the appeals. I haven't heard any outcome from the appeals of the appeal by the other teams. It's all gone a bit quiet. Yeah. That said, I haven't researched it, so I don't know whether something has come out, but no one seems to have been reporting.
But I don't think it has.
Oh, MBS. My God. Let's talk about the FIA changing the rules so he can stay in power for 150 million years. So Jean Todt, who is a Ferrari ex-boss, by the way, and was involved in rallying, he's been involved in motorsport for a long time, ex-FIA president, was the one to bring in fixed terms, saying that the FIA president can only serve 3 4-year terms as a maximum. Now, Mohammed bin Salem, who's now the FIA president, has changed that. So there's no fixed maximum term. There's no maximum terms. And he didn't get challenged in the last FIA election because the rules state that you have to have an FIA approved regional manager supporting your bid to run for president. And there's only one of them in South America. And he had the support from the South American FIA approved regional director, whatever the proper title is, which rendered his opposition void because they didn't have anybody. If that doesn't smell of corruption, I don't know what does, honestly. But in the second breath, I'll say that the FIA have just posted their best ever financials, you know, for a really long time. They're out of the red. They're in the black now. They've made a huge profit. If they can't make a huge profit when F1 is booming across the world, well, they're clearly doing something wrong. So I'm not going to say it's the talent of the FIA that's giving them a profit. It's the market forces, I would say. Supply, demand, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's outrageous. I think it's absolutely outrageous. I don't think anybody in any position should be allowed to stay unchallenged for eternity. I think if there was a proper way to challenge each current president, then fine, you don't maybe necessarily need terms. But the fact that there isn't, the fact that this man has a monopoly and a stronghold, or a stranglehold over this means that it's corrupt. And it is disgraceful. Yeah. It is absolutely disgraceful. But it is just another sign of these rich men getting richer and just looking at how they can hold on to power. And I'm trying not to bring in my political views here, but I just see it in so many other situations around the world. And it's disappointing to see it in Formula One, but I think it's disgusting.
I know.
Is the honest answer. I think it's disgusting. And I think it's really disappointing.
It's really disappointing.
I love the sport, but I find this just heartbreaking. You know what I mean? It's like, sorry, what are we going to have to put up with this man, this creep, for the next whatever 20-30 years? Is that what this is? And then his cronies are going to come in after him. It's not healthy for the sport, and it's really sad.
It just reeks of that old boys club, which
100%.
The FIA has been known for since the beginning of time. And that, you know, in a progressive society and a progressive sport, that, well, a sport that is supposed to be the pinnacle of motorsport, leading the way for other motorsport and other sports in general to follow, this feels like a major step backwards. And I agree with everything that you have just said. The other thing that really grates against me is when the drivers get out of their car and they've just won a race or they've just finished on the podium, and MBS is there being all pally with them. You're not mates with them. It's almost like he's fanboying them. Like, it's so cringe. I can't deal.
Yeah, it's just an attention seeker. I was going to use a different word. It's just an attention seeker. I want to be in the
ego.
Glory. I want to be a part of it. I am a part of it. I just find it really sickening. And it really puts a horrible taste on the sport. It's kind of sad in a way. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't predict any changes anyway the next while.
No.
I think the thing is, it's a very male-dominated sport. Yeah, it's a very male-dominated sport. And all racing as well. And there's really been pushes, obviously, for women to come through and for women to be driving. And obviously, but there's still no women in Formula One. There's no women in Formula Two or Formula Three. Obviously, we've got F1 Academy, but there's a lot of criticism around F1 Academy, which I don't 100% feel is just, but it doesn't feel like it's enough. And you see some great drivers. I'm so excited for someone like Dorian Pan, who's a development driver with Mercedes, who just raced in Le Mans, who had a heartbreaking race, was winning Le Mans. Could have made history. But it's great to see her. Obviously, Abby Pulling is doing really well, and there's some other female drivers as well, but it's not enough. And then obviously you've got Susie Wolf, and you've got a lot of women. I've done articles about it. There are a lot of women in motorsports, but it's still dominated by men. And by him doing this now, he's just making sure that it really is dominated, the FIA and that kind of body.
Yep. The old boys club will reign supreme for indefinitely, because he's changed the rules.
Thing I wanted to talk about really quickly, the camera work. Did you notice?
Oh my
the camera
God.
Work?
Oh my God. At what point I was yelling at the TV going, "You're making me feel seasick." Like, the drone was like following the cars. And at one point you look at the screen and you're like, 2/3 of my TV screen is the gravel trap and 1/3 is like the racetrack where the race cars are. It was
disaster.
Finally, it was too much. It was too much. It was not executed properly. And honestly, I was like, who is the bloody TV race director? Get it on camera too. Get it off the drone. Like, it was.
Oh my God.
Yes. I'm glad you brought it up. Yes. I had very strong thoughts about that as well. Well,
I thought I was alone feeling seasick. I remember at one point I turned to Simone and I was like, Jesus, I feel sick watching this. And then I was online after the race and loads of people were commenting about feeling seasick. It was just crazy. And I get what they were trying to do, but man, it did not work. It did not work. And at one point, because Simone said to me, like, these are really fast drones. They were competition drones or something. But at one point, the drones struggled to keep up. And I was like, miles back in the gravel. I was like, come on. And then at one point, Piastri was taking, this wasn't the drone, but this was camera work. Piastri was overtaking Charles, okay? And it was like, oh my God, amazing, let's see what's in. And they cut to the back of some dude's head. And you can't, he's blocking it. He's literally blocking the overtake because it was on a corner. And I'm like, come on. If it's not random people in the crowds, you're cutting to someone's back on his head. It makes no sense. And I get it's a fast moving sport. I get it. But this was just disastrous.
I know. I mean, the only good thing about the drone footage, not during the race as such was seeing the Austrian, like the surrounds of the circuit, yeah, which are really beautiful, like pine forests, and it's undulating with hills. And fun fact, 50% of people who attended the race apparently were camping. So in Austria, they set up like pop-up camping. I mean, you can camp yourself, bring your own camper van or tent, etc. Mm-hmm. Or they've also got pop-up camping areas where you pay and you get a tent. Some of them have proper beds in them. Some of them have like air mattresses and camping beds in them. Some of them have hotel services, so you can be in a tent and order room service. That's my style of camping. Like, you know, I just need an ensuite as well, so I don't have to share a bathroom with randoms. And then, I'd be camping if that were the case.
Me too, because of the way camping is there.
I know. Yeah, but speaking of footage and the commentary, watching Sky Sports, so they had Bernie Collins, who's an ex-Formula One strategist, doing the pit wall commentary. And she's normally very good. I mean, she drives me a little bit crazy because she's always like, oh, well, Profty, I was going to say, like, just cut that out. Just get to the point. But she was giving this kind of big, pretty detailed and interesting explanation of something that was going on the pit wall. But there was so much noise behind her, screeching of cars. And honestly, I was just, again, I was screaming at the TV, get her off and get her back on to talk about it when it's a bit quieter behind her. Between the noise in the background of Bernie Collins, the drone footage making everybody feel seasick, and yeah, that those awful cutaway shots, like you were saying, that, you know, the drone, then back to the race, to the back of someone's head. Yeah. Whoever was doing the TV race directing of Austria needs to have a good, long, hard look in the mirror. And I'm sorry if it was your first time doing it. I don't know who you are. Oh, the other thing I want to say is Rachel Brooks, who was a guest on the podcast a couple of months ago. She's written a book about Formula One, and she's been with Sky Sports Formula One for 17 years, has just announced that she has left Sky Sports. So she says she'll still be around Formula One. She'll be in the paddock at Silverstone. I'm not sure what role or doing what. She hasn't announced what yet. I really liked her warmth that she brought to the commentary team. She always interviewed the drivers with consideration. Rachel always approached drivers with warmth and compassion, and I respected her style. I liked the way she did her job. I think we've covered everything for Austria this week. So it's already race week again. And we've got Silverstone. I love Silverstone. I love the British Grand Prix. I feel like every year it delivers a really exciting race. I'm really looking forward to this one.
What are you predicting?
Oh, I don't want to say George Russell, but...
but maybe Lewis? Colder temperatures?
I mean, Lewis really likes Silverstone. And even when Mercedes were really struggling, he won at Silverstone. So Lewis is a good shout, actually. That's a good shout. Yeah, let's hope Lewis gets up in Silverstone. That'd be amazing. That's fabulous. So, Kira, we get to do this again in a few short days after the British Grand Prix.
Can't wait.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Hello, if you're watching on YouTube, and thanks for being here. We're stoked to have some new subscribers to the channel, but still the stats show that only a very small percentage, I think it's not even quite 10% of people that listen to this or watch this podcast on YouTube actually subscribe. So hit the button, subscribe, it really helps and it gives us a massive thrill. And thank you for being here. And you can follow us on all the social media platforms, Away We Go Podcast. We'll be back next week with the British Grand Prix race recap. Got any comments, suggestions, feedback, drop them in the comments. We love to read them. Thanks so much, everyone. Until next week. And until lights out.
Are you ready?
It's lights out and away we go.
Away We Go Podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto.